Welcome back to Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. In this podcast, we're going to talk about the idea of carbohydrates being fattening. The specific scientific term for this model is the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, what's the bottom line up front to what people want to know is, well, how do we gain fat, and then how do we lose it, and you know, and what does it matter?
And can you eat carbohydrates? Can you eat carbohydrates and lose fat, or not? And do carbohydrates, are carbohydrates inherently fattening? That's what that's the key. Patients come to us and say, "Doc, I need to lose weight. I think I just need to cut the carbs. But every time I cut the carbs, I don't, you know, XYZ. I can't stick to it or whatever. And I lose weight a little bit, and then I regain the weight." So yeah. Can you lose weight without having to cut carbs so low? And why did people think this in the first place?
Yeah. So historically, first of all, I mean, it's always been thought of and essentially known that somehow our adipose fat storage situation is based upon an energy balance of some sort. It's always kind of been the calories in, calories out.
Right.
Even though that's an oversimplistic sort of viewpoint, because it is an energy balance equation, but the complexities of both sides of that equation can be fairly vast.
Yeah,
but there are, I like to call them dietary evangelicals out there. So the low carb evangelicals, there's a lot of science to cutting carbohydrates, low carb diets to reduce energy intake, create an energy deficit, and lose weight. But over time, a lot of these relatively prominent scientists have really hung their hat on this and come up with the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity, ultimately blaming all of obesity, excess adiposity, and obesity complications on carbohydrates and sugars. So that's, you know, a little bit of a problem, because it gets too maniacal.
Basically what happened is, like, okay, so scientists say calories in versus calories out. We have our bodies, right? We need substrate to create tissue. We need some sort of energy to keep us moving throughout the day. And at some point, people are like, well, I don't know, cutting calories is kind of hard, and maybe there's something else going on here that's making us gain fat. So people looked at this idea that carbohydrates stimulate insulin. Insulin is this hormone that's anabolic. It increases fat storage. So they said, well, maybe carbohydrates are inherently fattening because of this insulin release. And when you eat carbohydrates, stimulate your pancreas, and you increase your insulin, hey, regardless of the calories, you're going to start creating fat tissue. And the way to lose the fat is basically to cut the carbohydrates. It's actually a great story. It's like, okay, we both went through medical school, and they kind of taught, not that idea, but they taught us the idea of insulin. So it's kind of plausible that, like, hey, yeah, more insulin. Yeah, I guess carbohydrates, insulin, fat gain. Do you need to lose fat? Got to cut out the insulin, I guess.
And it is well established that insulin is an anabolic hormone. That is,
yes,
it is a primary driver of storage into our adipocyte cells, our adipocytes.
Adipocytes, our fat cells.
And so, you know, so it's certainly an easy way to make sense of it. I get it. But
in fact, it was 2010. I'm a med student. You're maybe a resident.
General medicine resident, yeah.
In general medicine. We go to this, it was at this time called the American Society of Bariatric Physicians, right? ASBP.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we meet some, just, there's basically the people who wrote these low carb books. In fact, at one point we met Gary Taubes. At some point we had lunch with Robert Lustig. We met with every single low carb guru out there. And, you know, we're just learning. We're just getting into it and trying to understand this. And we're listening to the scientists and the textbooks where it's like, yeah, energy balance. But they made a good story to basically say and why, you know, it's understanding why patients get confused, because these people tell a great story to the point where I was like, well, maybe they're right. Maybe this is the new paradigm. Well, you know, it turns out that when you actually do the studies where you control for carbohydrate and insulin, and then you look at if you change the percentage of fat up or down and carbohydrates up or down, and you keep protein the same, it just doesn't matter. And actually, I think the way we probably figured this out best is when we started practicing. I know this for me. I was like, well, you got to go low carb. And the patient's like, well, actually, I did the rice diet. There's rice diets. There's like all sorts of plant-based diets where they went high carb, super low fat, and they felt great, and they lost a lot of weight in the past. And that's where I was like, okay, hold on a second. This whole low carb insulin model doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And that's where, you know, great scientists, researchers like Kevin Hall, and hopefully we have him on our podcast. He's done some pretty rigorous studies trying to look at this, because he wasn't really sure exactly, and he put together these metabolic ward studies and actually controlled what these people were eating on such a level to where you can look at all the little mechanisms and insulin and all these different things that's going on and how much body fat they're accruing or losing, to the point where it's like it doesn't matter. Carbohydrate, it all comes down to the calories. This doesn't mean that you have to count calories, but it doesn't mean you have to go super low carb either.
Yeah. And really what this goes back to, I think, is the complex nature of our energy balance regulation system. It is a very intricate, complicated system with a lot of individual variability. There's a lot of genetic factors to it, and then a lot of environmental factors that change it on an individual basis. That change our appetite, our satiety, our cravings, and you know, what we call metabolic flexibility. And so, you know, across the population level, it is very complex. And so, it's easy to, as you would say earlier, baffle the people with some bullshit.
Baffle with bullshit.
You know, I remember when Gary Taubes, he tries to use some of this real complex pathophysiology that we do know about now and say, and look, it doesn't make sense. But then suddenly he goes, oh, and it's all the carbohydrates driving insulin and driving weight gain.
Right.
But then we know from the metabolic ward trials, like Kevin Hall and the meta-analyses of those, to all the different interventional trials we have where, you know, we have the extremes. We have really low-fat, high-carb diets that work. We have low-carb, high-fat diets that work. We have Mediterranean diets that work. One of my favorite studies that he did in the metabolic ward was where they randomized they crossed over the people to have the processed, refined diet, all they could eat, and the more whole food diet that was obviously higher in fiber, vegetables, good quality proteins and stuff, and they automatically took in a significantly reduced energy intake, and that correlated perfectly to their weight and metabolism that came out of it. And so that stuff is probably more important, because it's about our energy intake and our metabolic flexibility with that. And we have all those data. And the thing is, all these dietary interventions do not have to be mutually exclusive. One of my missions, I swear, is to convince people that we can utilize all these different types of dietary interventions for any individual. We can do intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding in addition to cutting carbs and cutting fat, absolutely becoming more whole food rather than processed, refined-based, cutting the sugary sweetened beverages in favor of non-nutritive sweetened beverages like we did in our other podcast. And also meal replacement shakes. All these different ways can be done, and it has nothing to do with the insulin.
The idea is finding ways to cut calories out while also keeping your sanity, making sure you're not miserable. And misery comes from being too hungry. So the keto people will say this. They'll be like, no, the carbohydrates and insulin are causing people to be hungry. Well, that's interesting, because I know a lot of patients, and the studies back this up, there's a lot of people that eat higher carbs, lentils, freaking boiled potatoes, tubers, Casey's favorite tubers.
To be fair, those are higher in they're not refined and processed, and they're high in fiber and protein. and stuff like
so
that.
So these people, so their insulin's going higher, yet they're eating fewer calories and they're losing weight. So that doesn't even, none of it ever makes any sense. So energy balance comes, it can be explained like this. We actually take in certain foods and we extract calories from certain foods. So some people could drink a soda and extract those calories pretty easily. Some other people would be like, you can't compare soda, calories not a calorie because you can't compare soda to a chicken breast. And it's like, well, no, you can't, because one is in a liquid form, the other one's in a whole form. The other thing is they are actually different types of macronutrients, and the calories are within these macronutrients are actually metabolized and utilized differently. So you can't even, when they're saying a calorie is not a calorie, what they're saying is a macronutrient is not a macronutrient. And then you got to compare the food type, the food matrix, and what it comes packaged in. Because if you eat almond butter, for instance, you'll actually absorb fewer grams of fat from eating whole almonds than eating almond butter. And so all these things come into play that regulate our appetite.
Yeah, and you'll just eat less of it. You'll end up taking in fewer calories anyways.
Yeah. So honestly, the fact that people even boil it down to carbohydrates, insulin, and obesity is just, it's asinine. Insulin is absolutely involved, and there's a tiny little biological plausibility that there's probably some differences based on how much baseline insulin people secrete and how much body fat they accrue over their lifetime. But honestly, like from a practical standpoint, when it comes to just cutting out carbs or eating carbs, it just doesn't matter unless you feel that you are more satiated for whatever reason for going into a low carbohydrate dietary pattern, high amounts of probably leaner protein. Some people do better on maybe ribeyes than sirloin, but you're going to be taking in more calories.
They could also shift it to a more Mediterranean high-fat pattern and do even better, because we have pretty darn good data to support that effort.
So in the end, from a mechanistic standpoint, it doesn't actually make too much sense. There's a little bit of plausibility there, but from the big picture to take away from this, it just doesn't matter. It's still energy balance. The calories in versus calories out. It doesn't mean that you need to count calories. It just means that the calories matter most, and there's multiple things that are changing how many calories we want to take in, as we talked about before, with the food's process. It could be like the environment we're surrounded in, the stress of life. There's different things that change what makes us want to eat, not even just straight up hunger, but other things. In fact, like when you're sitting at night, when you're not even that hungry after dinner and you sit down and watch TV, you know, most of our patients say, you know what, I just want some snacky foods. I know that.
So do I.
I kind of like some potato chips, nuts, chocolate, whatever. And we're not hungry. So there's multiple things here that are going on that control our appetites. And it's not insulin and not carbohydrates.
And a few other points. By the way, you know, we used interventional data to talk about the artificially or non-nutritive sweeteners. And we've talked about this before, because if it was truly insulin that was causing the weight gain, then some of the interventional trials using medications would not show what they've shown. And so, for example, one of the best medications we have right now for weight loss and for glycemic control, mind you, is... are the GLP-1 agonists, specifically semaglutide for right now, which one of the mechanisms that these have, in addition to reducing or improving our satiety in our hypothalamus, they improve beta cell function and increase insulin secretion, only as needed, mind you, but and they result in remarkable weight loss and obviously glycemic control.
Safe insulin release, mind you, but lots of it.
Anybody who watched Fresh Prince back in the day knows that.
These drugs increase your amount of insulin, you know, in a glucose-dependent manner, meaning they won't increase insulin by themselves. But if you ingest carbohydrates with this drug, it will actually potentiate your insulin release and help you lower your blood sugar even better. But while doing that, you actually lose a massive amount of weight. So despite this increases in insulin, you lose weight. So like, it's just ridiculous.
Now this is, of course, what they'll do is they'll counter that with actually taking insulin for, say, people with type 1 diabetes or even type 2 diabetes, or the medications that are called sulfonylureas, which increase insulin release, but do it directly without any response to glucose. And yeah, those do lead to weight gain because it increases the nutrient uptake, the nutrient partitioning, we say. And so you have to make up for it. You have to eat to sometimes make up for those things. So intensive glycemic control does lead to weight gain. But
yeah, if you have a bunch of glucose in your blood and you're not getting into your system, you take some more insulin. And so, yes, of course, it's going to cause more weight gain. Yeah. Otherwise, actually, too, the other thing is you're pissing out a bunch of glucose. It actually prevents the loss of that, too, by now you're not excreting glucose. You're now taking it and you're putting it into adipose tissue.
Yeah. And so type 1 diabetes, you know, that's part of why people start to waste away. If it's not controlled and they have hyperglycemia, there's actually a diabetic anorexic sort of situation that can happen. Some patients, they refuse to give themselves insulin so that they waste away their glucose in their urine and they lose weight. It's actually a significant problem we run into.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And then just from a practical trial intervention, they've done, like you said before, they've done these different diets on a very small, short scale in the metabolic wards with Kevin Hall. And then they've done these other longer term studies where they've tried to do in a free living situation. And in the end, it just doesn't even matter.
And it comes down to adherence.
Diets don't even work that well relatively in the long run anyway. And it doesn't mean we say don't diet. It just means that if you're going to diet, it really doesn't matter if it's low carb or high carb, as long as the energy or calorie intake is there. And of course, focusing on the whole versus very ultra processed foods that will help you eat fewer calories. But
and they can both be done. Personalize the dietary therapy plan.
Yeah,
one more interventional trial or a series of interventional trials that sort of contradicts their model is all the trials using orlistat. So orlistat is a lipase inhibitor, for those of you who don't know, that reduces the amount of fat absorption we have. Thus, you poop it out. And it automatically reduces the energy intake even though you ate it. And so these trials all show weight loss. They show cardiometabolic benefits. They show glycemic control, even though it's fat. And so these trials are always low fat, higher carb than, say, the low carb, high fat diets. And they all show benefits. So that may or may not be the best way for any individual to do it. The point is that essentially just completely contradicts and proves wrong the way they've tried to sell the carbohydrate insulin model of obesity. It doesn't mean you can't go low carb. Doesn't mean you can't go low fat. It means you personalize the therapy the best to provide an individualized energy deficit. And, you know, because of the complexity of obesity, we often have to use medication, some of which increase insulin.
one more. So now to their side, though, there are some medicines, octreotide, diazoxide, these things that you use more often than I would, that basically stop insulin production, lower insulin production. And there is a very small benefit. We would never use these in clinical practice, but from a mechanistic standpoint, there's a small little bit of weight loss. But the amount of weight loss is clinically, I'm not going to say irrelevant, but almost clinically pretty small, to the point where it's like, I just don't really care about the acute insulin release from carbohydrates or even the baseline.
Yeah. And I mean, this could circle back to, you know, patients with type 1 diabetes. We don't want them to go without their insulin. There are other issues with that. You know, that are problematic.
Yeah. The other thing is, we do have medicines that help you pee out more sugar. You lose a little bit more weight with that too, those sodium glucose transporter inhibitors as well. But again, in the end, the point here, if you're a physician and you're telling your patients they have to cut carbs, you're wrong. Number one. Number two, you're also doing them a disservice by not offering multiple ways. It's fine if you think that the best way for them to lose weight is to cut carbs, but that's not the only way, number one. Number two, I will say that if you have type 2 diabetes and the patient thinks the only way for them to lose weight is to cut out carbs, that's not necessarily true, but it can potentially help.
Yeah. And a lot of people do. We in general, we all probably take in a lot of excess calories from carbohydrates, and our patients with varying degrees of severe type 2 diabetes, they certainly do improve their glycemic control when they cut down on their glycemic loads, because a lot of them do eat high processed, refined, high carbohydrate foods. But
well, most people are actually, the carbs that they eat aren't lentils. It's usually, you know, it's like potato chips and super, super high calorie, yummy types of foods that are just high in energy, both carbohydrates and fat. So the takeaways for if you're a patient, if you're like, look, I feel like I do well on keto, but I can't continue the super low carb lifestyle. You can have carbohydrates. You would just have to look at the amount of fat that you're eating and cut out fat and just try to find other ways to cut out calories. It doesn't have to be only carbohydrates. It's usually in the form of fat from some unknown source of food. So
that's the gist. And if you have type 2 diabetes, one, using a continuous glucose monitor can help you, but also eating more of your carbohydrates from high fiber vegetables, beans, legumes, including some fruit. You know, one of the things I hate is that when people say, oh, don't eat the fruit because that makes your sugar go up. Well, you know, in the context of an otherwise whole food diet that reduces energy intake, it's going to ultimately, in the long run, likely be beneficial. But, you know, there's something to be said for that on an individual basis, and personalize it with your doctor, your dietitian, and your healthcare team.
Yeah, we'll do another podcast all about glycemic control. And treating type 2 diabetes with lifestyle. But I think that covers it for now. Anything else?
No, I think that's about right. Hopefully this generates some more questions, and then we can do some follow-up podcasts to it. We'll get Kevin Hall on, or maybe some of these other guys.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good. All right, see you, everybody. Like and share. Send to your friends. Subscribe. Bye.
Bye-bye.